first song that we sang tonight, I'm Happy Today, many years ago was translated into the Czech language. And almost every time I go back to České Budějovice, that's the song that we sing. I'm really happy that the melody is the same. Nothing's lost in that translation, but the wording is entirely different. Isn't that interesting that people all over the world sing the same songs in different tongues? Marcella's chili is still good. I'm still eating it. I said that tongue in cheek. I hope she understands that, because I have a nice memento that she very kindly brought to me, some Tums. We're happy that you're here today. My first statement will probably sound like an untruth. I remember what it was like to be a teenager, way back in the last century. I can remember as a boy growing up in Jacksonville, Florida, the oldest child in a family of seven. My mother and my father were native Floridians. Both of them were Christians. Between my brother, Richard, and I, unfortunately, there were three girls, so I was the lone boy for 12 long years until my brother was born. And I remember all of the insecurity, all of the anxiety, all of the acne, and all of the other kinds of things that go along with being a teenager. And I suspect that as we read the Bible, we don't think about teenagers. I don't. I think about people, different people. They're not like me. They wore different clothes. They lived in a different part of the world. Am I really like those people? Do I have any resemblance to Abraham, to Moses, to Daniel? Yes, I do. Because the same God that made me also made them. And there has not been any change in the human race that I know of since the time that God created Adam and Eve. They're the only generation that did not have to go through the teenage years. They were born, they were created as mature adults. But every subsequent generation, every single person had to go through those troubling years between the ages of 13 through 19. Our story tonight begins about 600 years before the birth of Jesus. It begins in the center of the Jewish universe, in the city of Jerusalem. But it is not a happy place. Because encamped outside the walls of that city is the mightiest army in the world, with one of the mightiest kings the world had seen up until that time by the name of Nebuchadnezzar. It had not been very long before he came off of a great victory over the Egyptians. And now he's turning his attention to the Israelites who live in Jerusalem and in Judea. He breaks through the walls, he enters the city, he ransacks the temple. He takes some of the most sacred vessels that's ever been made by human hands and he carries them off to the temple of his God. But that's not all he carried off. He carried off some people. He carried off some teenagers, some boys. I'm not being derogatory when I call teenagers boys. I don't mean that in a bad way. But they're not men yet. They're boys. What was their childhood like? What was the childhood of Daniel and Mishael and Hananiah and Azariah. What was it like to grow up in Jerusalem, the sacred city? What were their parents like? What kind of rules did they have? I don't know. But I have an inkling, I have a good idea, that they had some rules in their house. And now these boys are going to be yanked up out of their comfortable environment. And they've been made prisoners. Four boys with a whole bunch of other boys and perhaps girls, I'm not sure about that, but other youths. And they're going to be taken to a foreign country. How would you like that? How would you like it if someone came into the sanctity of your home and said, you can't live here anymore. You are going to, and just name the most horrible place that you can think of. That's where you're going. These boys, that's your cue. These boys are just plain old ordinary looking boys. Can you pick out Daniel? I can't. And I really don't know who these boys are, but these are typical Jewish boys. There's nothing special looking about those boys. None of them has a crown on their head, although they possibly could have been some of Hezekiah's descendants. But these boys have a very uncertain future in front of them, because they are now taken from the place that they've grown up, the place with which they're familiar, and they're going to a foreign country. How are they going to get there? Well, they're going to drive, of course. Of course not. They're going to have a long, long journey. Now, this is a map of the Babylonian Empire. It's not the largest empire that ever existed, but it's pretty big, isn't it? Jerusalem is just a little bitty speck. Started way over there toward the Mediterranean. Why couldn't they just cut right straight across and go to Babylon? You would not want to walk in that country. It's desert. It is rocky. It is hilly. And there's not much to see and there's not much to drink. And so they more than likely are going to take the maritime route up the coast and then begin their cut over through Mesopotamia until they finally arrive in Babylon. Now, Babylon is quite a sight to see, I suspect. But I don't think they were looking forward to it. What's going to happen to us there? Will we be thrown in prison? The longer they walked, the longer they had to contemplate what was in front of them. They didn't have any Nike Jordans, no Air Jordans to walk in. I guess they had just plain old sandals. They finally arrived in Babylon. But things are not as bad as you may think they could be, because these are going to be four special boys. These special boys are going to school. King Nebuchadnezzar had determined that of all of these captives, the most handsome and the smartest are going to be selected. That included Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The first thing that's going to happen is they get new names. I told you I remembered what it was like to be a teenager. I also remember what it was like my first day at basic training at Lackland Air Force Base. All of my beautiful hair was shaved completely off. I looked just like every other bald-headed airman there. I lost my identity. So did these boys. They got Babylonian names. Daniel's name is Belteshazzar. And the other three have the names of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. To tell you the truth, I remember their Babylonian names, at least for the last three, better than I remember their Hebrew names. But they're given those names, I think, for a purpose. You are now a Babylonian. Your Hebrew days are gone. In the past, you're starting over. And these boys go to school. They're in a special school where they're going to be learning all of the intricacies and the language of the Babylonian Empire. But there's one of those boys, Daniel, and it's interesting, Daniel almost always keeps his Hebrew name. You hardly ever hear him referred to as Belteshazzar except by the Babylonians. Daniel has an idea. He's going to approach one of the innkeepers, so to speak, one of the men who has the charge of these boys. We'd like to change our diet. Well, maybe they didn't like Babylonian food. Listen, I've been to countries where I didn't like their food, and I'd be willing to change my diet if I could. But they were going to be fed what the king eats. They were going to be fed the king's dainties and the king's delicacies. And they were going to be furnished with the king's wine. I mean, what more could a teenager want? The best of food and the best of drink. And Daniel says, we do not wish to do that. Please, he was courteous. We do not want to take this food. Oh, the man says, the king will have my head. I can't change your diet. He said, I'll make you a deal. Let us try this for 10 days. And if you, at the end of 10 days, see that we are poorer as a result of this diet, then we'll eat the king's food. What's the matter with this boy? Why doesn't he want to eat the king's food? I raised a question earlier that I suspect that these boys had some good training at home. You know what kosher is? I got acquainted with what kosher was many, many years ago when portable dishwashers were really quite the thing, and we bought an old secondhand portable dishwasher that was a kosher dishwasher. It washed only the dishes that would be used in those special Hebrew meals. The Hebrew people had a special diet. There was food. Their law prohibited them from eating. They couldn't have pork chops. They couldn't have catfish. They couldn't have a lot of things us Southern boys really think is the creme de la creme of food. But they could not eat that. Now imagine a 17-year-old boy in a strange country with no parents looking over his shoulder, saying, I'm sorry, but I can't eat that stuff. I need to eat some of my own food. And guess what he wanted to eat? Vegetables. Can't you hear your mother saying, Edward, eat your vegetables? That's what they had to eat. Vegetables and water for 10 days. And at the end of those 10 days, they look good. They look better than all those other guys looked. And they stayed on that diet for the rest of their schooling, which lasted 3 years. At the end of chapter 1 of Daniel, there is this statement, which is rather surprising, but you have to pay very careful attention in order to get the emphasis in this verse. And Daniel continued until the first year of Cyrus the king. Cyrus the king. Have any idea how long that would be? Daniel probably went away into Babylonian captivity in 606 BC, about 600 years before the birth of Jesus. Cyrus the king began his reign in 559. Let's see. That is almost 50 years right there. Do you know how old Daniel was when he was in the lion's den? I'm not going to answer that question tonight. Just think about that. Now, there is an interlude in Daniel chapter 2 that involves Daniel interpreting a dream, and that's not part of our story tonight. It's an important part of the book of Daniel, but not a part of our story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Turn to Daniel chapter 3. The boys are out of school. They're no longer teenagers. And as almost always happens, teenagers grow up to be real adults. They're real people now. And they have responsible positions. They are in the hierarchy of the Babylonian government. And they are doing very well. Nebuchadnezzar evidently has taken a liking to these boys, these young men. But there is a bird that is under King Nebuchadnezzar's saddle about something. Because the king is going to build, as the next slide will show, an image. Now, I don't know if that's what the image looked like or not. Maybe that's the king himself. Maybe he's the kind of guy that wants to perpetuate his image all over his kingdom. And so he builds this great golden image. This image is almost 90 feet high. Now, this is not a tourist attraction. This is an image that is evidently to be worshipped by the people. And so the king makes a law. Kings can do that, you know. Kings don't have to go through any other form of government to make their rules. They just say, this is the way it is, and that's the way it is. His law states that when you hear the sound of the music, all of my subjects are going to bow down and worship this image. Now, there are some Hebrews in that group of people, including Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. What are they going to do? What would you do? People sometimes have the mistaken idea that if it's lawful, it is morally correct. No, that's not right. Simply making something lawful does not change its nature, just from perhaps illegal to now legal. But there was something in the law that Nebuchadnezzar made that immediately provoked a response from these three young men. And I've often wondered, if I had been in that group, if I had heard what the king had to say, and I heard the music play, and I saw the man on my right and then the lady on my left fall to the ground and worship that image, what would I do? Would I stand up and look around while everybody else is bowing to the ground? You know, peer pressure is very important. It is a very weighty thing. Did these boys have any peer pressure? They surely did. And what these boys did is quite amazing. And if their parents knew what they had done, it would have made them proud. I can just imagine how they felt. I'm a parent. I have two boys and five grandboys. No girls. And I remember how I felt when my first grandson, my oldest grandson, became a Christian. And I remember how I felt when my second grandson became a Christian. Now, I didn't have anything to do with it, except to raise their fathers. But the fact is that these boys were doing what they had been trained to do. But that's really not enough. You cannot inherit your parents' faith. You have to make it your own. And just think, these boys are hundreds of miles away from home with no parents overseeing what they are doing. And now they have to stand on their own two feet, literally, and not bow down to that image. Is their faith strong enough to do it? It is. Because I'll tell you what happened. Daniel goes on to explain that there is a conspiracy. There are enemies in that group. And the enemies of these Hebrew boys go directly to Nebuchadnezzar with the report. King, you made a law, didn't you? Yes. And that law says when the music sounds, all of your subjects are to bow down and worship. Yes. There's some people that are not doing that. Hebrews. Specifically, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. What kind of a man is Nebuchadnezzar? One of these mild-mannered Clark Kent type guys? You can't get him ruffled. He's angry. He's in a rage. Now, he had some sort of a special penalty attached to this law that evidently that the lawbreaker was going to be put to death in the most painful way imaginable. Fried, oven roasted in a furnace. When Nebuchadnezzar calls Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to him, he says, "Do you understand the law?" "Yes." "I'll give you another chance. When you hear the sound of the music, bow down and worship my image, and everything will be forgiven." What are they going to do? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king. This is Daniel 3, verse 16. "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." What a bunch of narrow-minded people. Why can't they just kind of cross their fingers and say, "Well, you know, it's not going to really make a difference the way that I really feel. I'm just going to go through the motions." They did not go through the motions. There's a danger in going through the motions. And so what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, "King, we're not going to fall down and worship. God can deliver us if he wishes. He may or he may not. But whatever the situation be, we are not going to serve your image." Listen, that's like pouring gasoline on the fire for Nebuchadnezzar. Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with wrath, and his facial expression was altered toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. "I'll show you." He orders the furnace heated 7 times hotter than it had ever been heated before. Now, I don't know how they figured it was 7 times hotter, but what difference does it make? It is hot. And here's what he does. He has some of his palace guards, some of his elite men, and they tie these boys up. They bind them. Can't move. And tell these big hefty warriors, "You go throw these boys in that furnace over there." And they pick up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And as they approach the furnace, the soldiers die. The furnace is so hot it kills them. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego fall into that furnace. What in the world were they thinking? Were they thinking, "This is it"? Have you ever been in a place where you thought that maybe you're going to die? I've been in some places where I thought I might die. It's not a happy feeling. The very idea that you may have drawn your last breath on earth, and those boys are in the furnace. I don't know where Daniel was. Did Daniel see what happened? I doubt it. Perhaps he was somewhere in the provinces. But here are these three boys. And can you imagine Nebuchadnezzar thinking, "I'm going to have to write a letter to their parents and say, 'I'm sorry, your sons were so disobedient, I had to teach them a lesson.'" Listen, the king got taught a lesson. Because instead of that fire burning up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the king says to one of his men, "Did we not put 3 people in that furnace? I see 4. And one of them looks like a son of the gods. And they're walking around there in that furnace. What is going on?" And the text says King Nebuchadnezzar goes up to the furnace and he says, "Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, come out. And they walk out of that furnace. Wouldn't you like to have been there? Just to see what in the world the effect was of this stupendous event, which was triggered by the refusal of three Hebrew boys to violate what their sacred law says. You shall worship the Lord your God, and Him only shall you serve. Boy, that just sends chills up and down my spine to think about how brave those boys were. Are there any brave teenagers in this audience tonight? Any brave young men and women? Are you as brave as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? It's not miraculous. These boys were just plain old ordinary Hebrew boys living in a plain old ordinary Hebrew family. But they had a special book, a special law, a law that came from God. And God said, you obey my will, I'll be with you. I will be your God. You will be my people. You are to be holy because I am holy. Listen, it took courage for these boys to stand up under the edict of the king. And it's going to take courage for young men and young women to stand up against the edicts of our culture, which tries its very best to get us to conform to the image of what our culture wishes us to be, and that is completely secular with no intrusion of religious matters into life at all. Well, you know what the end of this story is? The semi-end is found at the end of chapter 3. I would like to think that Nebuchadnezzar was converted, but he wasn't. He's going to use terminology, I think, which is quite appropriate to discussing the unique nature of God, but I do not believe that Nebuchadnezzar became a believer in Jehovah. But he believes in some God. He believes in this God that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have been worshiping because that God has saved them. And now he's going to make another law. Listen to this law. Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who put their trust in him, violating the king's command and yielding up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their God, their own God. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or tongue that speaks anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb, and their houses shall be reduced to a rubbish heap, inasmuch as there is no other God who is able to deliver in this way. Now listen, I don't like totalitarian governments, but I really wish that I could hear that stated today in our country, that any person who belittles the name of God, let his house become a rubbish heap. The name of God is taken in the most profane way, so casual and so often today, that there's nothing unique about God. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego believed there was. And they said, we will not serve your God. Boys and girls, young men and young women, you reflect upon the lives of these four real persons. They're real folks. They're not some sort of a manufactured fictional character in the book of Daniel. These boys actually lived. They breathe the same kind of air that you breathe and eat the same kind of food that you eat. And yet they have the audacity and the faith and the courage to stand up to their king and tell that king, we will not violate the will of God in order to serve you. End of the story. Listen, there are some great stories in the Old Testament. And there are some wonderful stories in the New Testament. But all of them were written for our learning and our admonition. We need to learn something from these boys. Because these boys grew up to be men. And by an advance in thinking, our teenagers are going to grow up to be men and women, and may they be men and women of conviction and faith like these young men. Thank you for listening tonight. If you're not a Christian, and it's interesting, none of these boys was a Christian. They were Hebrew boys. I'd like to think that had they lived during the days of Jesus Christ, they would have been an immediate follower of Jesus Christ. But they were God's children, God's people. Would you want to be one of God's children tonight? Well, you can't be God's child and be a Hebrew boy or girl. If you're going to be God's child, you'll have to be a Christian. And to become a Christian, you need to confess your faith that Jesus Christ is the unique Son of God. He died for my sins, and I want to have them forgiven in the blood of Christ, and I'll submit to baptism in order to have my sins washed away. Would you do that tonight? While we stand and sing this song, we invite you to come.